This is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty. Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. We got a great guest again today. It is one of the original Andersons and a original member of the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, Lars Anderson. We'll have that interview coming up in just a bit. But before we get there, make sure you subscribe to us and follow us on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheDaveDynasty. Lots of good stuff there. Some new wrestling going to be going up on there in the imminent future. So stay tuned for that. And as always, the best way to support the show financially is to buy one of our shirts. You can go to prowrestlingtees.com/TheDaveDynasty. While we're taking care of some housekeeping and some business at hand, do keep in mind that in 2024, the WFIA, the Wrestling Fans International Association, will be holding a three-day virtual convention on September 13th, 14th, and 15th. More information will be coming, so be sure to join today for all the perks and latest news. Already has some great guests lined up, Ken Patera, the High Flyers, Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzel, a few others. So it's a very cool thing. The WFIA is a very, very great organization that I'm on the board of and I fully support. So you want to make sure you get on board, right? It's free to join. Go to thewfia.org and join the WFIA Facebook group. And that way you can keep up on everything and get all the perks of the group. So a couple little news bits that I wanted to discuss just a little bit. Everybody's talking about the fact that CM Punk recently appeared on the Ariel Helwani's MMA Hour podcast. He discussed his WWE return, his injury, a bit about his AEW departure. Excuse me. And it is a really, really great interview. Everybody knows I'm a Punk fan. I know he's a very divisive personality, but divisive personalities, man, are what drive professional wrestling, let's be honest. But this interview is really great, and I think it's very much worth a listen. He can't go into certain aspects of the AEW departure because of an NDA, but he does this, you know, does talk about a few things about his time there. But it's definitely worth a listen, so go check that out. Also, everybody knows that I'm a fan of the Dark Side of the Ring series, and this week's episode is one of them that I've been looking forward to most this season, and is the one on Harley Race. I can't wait. They put up a little teaser with some footage, some personal footage, and it's amazing. And I can't wait to see this thing. The time this drops, I will have seen it. So there you go. But check that out and support Dark Side of the Ring, man. Their shows are, you know, they're fun. I like them. I know everybody sometimes gives them hell because it's like, oh, we're talking about the seedy dark side. Yeah, well, you know, that's what people talk about, man. People talk about that stuff, and it's not always like that. But they dive into some of those tall tales in the mythology of wrestling that we all discuss so much. But before we move on, guys, make sure you check out the Ultimate Classic Wrestling channel featuring the Savoldi Library, and it's got much, much more on there. You can go to classicwrestling.net or download the app on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, the Apple iOS mobile, coming soon, I believe, to Android. There's tons of stuff on here, man. Great classic footage on there. Stuff that, you know, particularly caught my eye, of course. There's, you know, WWA Indianapolis, there's Detroit, ICW, Global, USWA Dallas, and so much more. There's just tons of stuff on here. More content is being added all the time. There's an upcoming, speaking of Harley Race, there's an upcoming Harley Race collection, a show that they're doing with a collection of matches and discussing his career and different things. Which is really, really cool. I was, you know, honored to be able to preview it. It's got a great, you know, lots of great matches, including, you know, Harley versus Dick the Bruiser. So much more is in there. It's a great show, man. You're going to want to see it. So make sure you subscribe so that when that's dropped, you can view it. The subscription, it's worth more than the subscription, man. You're going to, hours of content on here, hours and hours. And great stuff to watch. You're going to, if you're a classic wrestling fan, and if you listen to this, I'm guessing that you are, you're going to love it. So go to classicwrestling.net and sign up now. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will have that interview with a member of the one of the original members of the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, Lars Anderson. So stick around. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror podcast. It It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by one of the original members of the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, Lars Anderson. Sir, how are you?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I am doing good. I appreciate you giving me your time. Let's dive right into it. You were an athlete when you grew up and into college. What made you decide to make the switch and dive into pro wrestling?
Well, Buddy Wolf, who I later trained and was partners with, we played football and college wrestling. And a guy by the name of Bob Rasmussen, who you probably don't know or remember, but anyway, he was an All-American at Minnesota, played at the University of Minnesota, and then he went played in the Canadian Football League. And he had turned professional wrestling, or turned to, he became a professional wrestler. And Vern Gagne owned the territory, you know, AWA. Mm-hmm. And Bob was getting, you know, more popular. And so he crashed a little bit. Anyway, he was finishing up at St. Cloud State University. Buddy Wolf mm-hmm. was talking to him about wrestling and so forth, you know, and like, in any event, you know, like, I was complaining, we were working out down in the East, and I was complaining about the job offers. You know, I was a psychology major, double major, psychology and sociology. I was going to go into probation work. Best mm-hmm. offer I had, you know, I had a wife and child at the time, you know, it was like $1,000, you know, like a month. I said, well, I can't even do this. How can I do that? He said, well, you should. He said, I've been talking to Bob Rasmussen. He said, you should, and we were both wrestling, you know, and played football and wrestled together. And said, you should try professional wrestling. I said, what? That bullshit? You know, so, anyway, Vern was then having a match. I thought about it later. And I knew Bill Cassisto in the Minneapolis wrestling office. You know, he used to swim in the summertime. He was a booker and a road agent, you know, old-time Green Bay Packer player. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I called the wrestling office and they, you know, talked to Bill and Vern was having a match in St. Cloud at the Armory, you know, like, and he was on the card, you know, so I put on, at that time I was played football around 235, 240, mm-hmm. and I was wrestling 191 National Collegiates and would cut down to 177, you know, for the National Collegiates. So I put on three sweaters and heavy jacket. went down to see him and told him that I was going to the San Francisco Club, you know, the next week, and going to wrestle there. And when I got back, you know, I'd like to talk to him. So he said, "Yeah, when you get back, talk." You know, goodbye. So he set up a ring at his farm. Mm-hmm. It was like one of the first students, you know, like to go through his Eddie Sharkey helped me train me a little bit. Gene Anderson, later we became the Anderson brothers, you know, mm-hmm. and Vern would, you know, come out a few times. So that's how it all started.
Yeah, and like you said, you came up with, you know, trained with Vern and Sharkey and those guys in the AWA. And like you said, at 65, you became Lars Anderson when right. Gene was around. So how did it come up for you to become an Anderson and start teaming with Gene?
Well, Gene's, you know, had been on the road, you know, for a couple, three, 4 years at that time, you know, it hadn't made any money realistically, you know, so he convinced me, you know, that we could become a tag team, go on the road, you know, and then, so I said, okay, well, it sounds like something, you know, like I can learn, you know, because I'm making money and learn, you know, so went to the office and Vern booked us in Tennessee. And, you know, I had just graduated from college in 64 and bought a new Oldsmobile convertible. And so there we were in Tennessee. We had two guys that would ride with, you know, pay trance. Gene would pay trance, you know, otherwise, you know, and I had one credit card when I graduated from college. the payoffs in Tennessee were at home about, matter of fact, you couldn't even get it. Get it out, put a stamp together, get it home.
Well, you and Gene, I think you guys were working in Georgia around 68. Right. And they added Ole to the family. So why was the decision made to add a third brother? Why did that come up?
No, we were the way it worked out. We went from Tennessee, you know, like we were there about 6 weeks. Called Vern up and said, "Look, you know, Vern, I love the business of work, but you know, like this is not working out, you know." So yeah. He booked us with Charlotte, with Jim Crockett in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Yep. We went from there, we were there about 6 months, and then we went to Georgia. And then what happened was, you know, Jim Crockett says, you know, like he had put money into the Malenko and Larry Hamilton, Missouri Mahler, push their team. He said, mm-hmm. if we had to push the Andersons, we'd money with these guys now, you know, like the other team didn't work out. So we were in Georgia 6 months, and then we came back to North Carolina, and we were there about 6 months, and I was in Minnesota for an alumni game, you know, alumni against a varsity, you know, football. Yep. And I saw The Rock, you know, Alan Rogowski, mm-hmm. you know, like told him, you know, he had just started, Vern had started. And, you know, just, you know, he was taking him to Omaha and back and forth. And I said, well, we could, you know, like, we're doing pretty well. We could bring you in as a third brother. And that's how it, you know, so I sold the office, you know, on the third brother concept, you know, and Ole got off the plane, Rock got off the plane in Charlotte. And says, so who am I? And I says, well, you're Ole Anderson. What? Ole Anderson. And the rest is history. The rest is history.
And am I correct? Did you guys all wear, did you have a thing with your wrestling boots with the I think it was the maroon with the gold stripes? Was that an Anderson thing that you guys did intentionally
in terms of the boots, you mean?
Yeah. How did that come up?
I'm sorry, ask the question again. I'm sorry.
With your guys' boots, I've seen that you guys had your boots, right? The solid color with the gold stripes, right? The gold.
Maroon and gold.
Yeah, the maroon and gold.
Yeah, you know. Colors, you know, really gold.
Yeah. And that kind of became those boots kind of became the Anderson signature.
Yeah, trademark, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And of all the Andersons, you kind of broke off and did your own thing more than probably any of them.
Right.
Maybe outside of Holy. But I mean, you went all over, right? You wrestled, you know, singles in, you know, Mid-Atlantic, San Francisco. You did another stint in the AWA. You were kind of all over.
Right.
When you went back to the AWA, you also teamed with Larry Henning. Which right. is a man, it's a name that I don't think it's talked about enough, how good a worker he was. So what was it like teaming with Larry?
He was excellent, you know, like got along very well and tried to do a little bit of the Anderson style, but Larry had his own concept of quick story, you know, like we were they put the belts on us. I forget, you know, what year it was, but I had, you know, hurt my ankle or my knee. Mm-hmm. You know, and he had sprained his, you know, like we should not have been working at that point. We should have taken time off and rested and healed up. But we leaned on each other, you know, getting to the ring and back. You know, we're on top. And once, you know, the business, once you're on top, and then they take you off the top, you know, it takes you sometimes, you know, half a year to get back there, you know. So.
Yeah.
You know, so we suffered through it.
Yeah, but you had a lot of tag team partners in your career. Right? I mean, Gene, Ole, Larry. You mentioned your friend from college,
California.
Yeah, Bob Roop. You teamed with some all kinds of guys. Did you have a favorite partner, or did you just enjoy them all in a different way?
I would say, you know, Gene. And, I mean, the combination. Gene actually, you know, like he could work. But he couldn't talk, so I talked. You know, I did the mm-hmm. I handled the microphone. You know, at that point. But I would say we did our own particular style. You know, which people tried to emulate, but yep. could not because you know, like it was our style. We knew how to do it. We did it. You know, that was it.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been talked about, right? The Anderson style, particularly, you know, pinpointing a body part, working on it, and everything else. And that started with you guys. And, right. You know, that kind of became the Anderson thing, you know, all the way through and including in around 83, right. They brought Arn into the family. Did you ever team with Arn? Were you ever in a situation where you and Arn worked together?
No, I never met him actually.
Oh, actually never met. Okay. Well, that kind of leads me to my next question. Around 85 in the Mid-Atlantic, Ole and Arn, they formed the Four Horsemen with Tully and Flair. And they build Flair as the cousin of the Anderson. And at that time, I think you were in Hawaii.
Right.
But did anyone ever call you, talk to you about potentially coming back to Mid-Atlantic and being part of it and doing a complete, no. you know, the Horsemen as a family?
No.
I
was doing my own thing in Hawaii at that time, you know, like,
yeah.
you know, part owner of the company.
Yeah, I always thought it would make sense, all right, instead of Tully, to have Lars in there, right, and have the whole family. But I'm guessing, like you said, if they'd called, you probably would have said, eh, I'm okay. Not a bad gig in Hawaii, is it?
Yeah, no. We promoted the other islands. We did promotions on Maui and the big Lahaina and Lanai and Molokai. And then we did Samoa, New Zealand, a little bit of Australia, with a little bit of the West Coast. We did San Jose and we did LA a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah, and this was for Polynesian Pro, right? With
Philippines and Malaysia, yeah, Polynesian Pro.
Yeah, with the Maivias, did right. you get along? I mean, I'm assuming you got along well with the Maivias, and it was a good atmosphere. Well,
yeah, well, it would have been my Leah Maivia because Peter had passed.
Yeah, right.
I was a Caucasian, a Haole, sitting in the Paramount High Chief's chair, telling the Samoans, "No, you don't do it like this. You do it like this." So of course, you know, like it didn't. Over too well, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, Hawaii, I mean, you were in that particular spot too there in Hawaii where it became very noted. You got a lot of guys on their way to and from Japan. So you had that opportunity a lot. Japan, yeah, it opened a lot of doors for you guys to book talent.
A lot of good talent going through.
Yeah. And while you were in Hawaii, you encountered a young Dwayne The Rock Johnson, correct?
Yeah. He was about, 10, 11 years old when I first met him. I mean, he would come into the office, you know, like, cause you know, because being in Hawaii, people going through, we kept the belts in the office. We didn't let the big guys carry the belts around, you know? So
yeah,
he would come in the office. First thing he would do, he'd go to get the belt, he'd put the belt on and parade around, you know, he was the champion. I mean, it was funny. Dewey was, you know, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and he wrote, I think he wrote in one of his books or his biography or whatever, something about how he had words with you, quote unquote, because something about, I think it was not putting a title on Bad News Allen or something.
Yeah, I wouldn't put Bad News Allen over, and he got in my face a little bit. I remember it. I don't recall it as such. his grandmother, Leah, you know, said later, you know, like, don't worry about Dewey, you know. So what are you talking about, you know, like, I mean, I guess, you know, he made more of it than I'm, you know, he was maybe at that time around 14 or so, 14 or 15.
Yeah. I always thought Bad News Allen or, you know, Bad News Brown later when he was in WWF was a great, great talent. And
yeah, he was a good talent. Good, easy to work with.
Yeah.
Easy
very, very underappreciated. You know, and he, I think he kind of had that Brody aspect of him, right? He could have probably done more if he was willing to kind of, you know, take more shit, but he really stood up for himself and, you know, didn't put up a stuff. I've obviously worked in Calgary and lots of, you know, other places, you know, judo.
Yeah, he worked a lot in Calgary. Yeah.
Well, Ole Anderson, obviously he recently passed away.
Right.
And, do you have, you know, an Ole story to share with us that maybe, you know, maybe people haven't heard or whatever. I mean, Ole gets this stigma of being this old, crusty, kind of hard to deal with kind of guy. What was your encounters with Ole like and working with Ole?
Well, I mean, when we were working, you know, like as a three, you know, like when we, let me tell you the one story when he got introduced, you know, to the Charlotte territory, you know, like we were working on Raleigh Television, which went all, they bicycled it all around the Carolinas. Uh-huh. Dean and I against Becker and Weaver, who were the office, basically the bookers for the office, you know. So, you know, Becker, well, going back, you know, like I'll back up a little bit, you know, like they wanted a black star, you know, Jim Crockett wanted a black star, you know, and like he had Luther, you know, like, and he's saying, you know, Jim weighed about 450 pounds and twiddling his thumbs on his belly, you know, saying, Well, Luther is just, he's just not black enough, you know. What? He's not black enough, you know. He wouldn't talk to Jive and even whatever. So they brought in Sailor R. Thomas. So yep. We're working on Raleigh Television, you know, and Becker, we're, you know, like stomping, you know, Becker and Weaver, and we're getting the upper hand on them, getting the upper hand on them, you know, like, you know, then in comes this guy from, you know, like the third Anderson, old Anderson from out beside the curtain, you know, like, and jumps more on him. So all three are pounding on Becker and Weaver. Then from the outside, other curtain comes, they'd never seen him before, Sailor R. Thomas. So here we are. Ole's flying over the top rope. Lars is flying over the top. Gene's flying over the top rope. We sold out all summer long, you know, like where we do it, like Roanoke, for example, we would do we'd do 3,000 people, maybe 2,500 to 3,000. We go outside in the ballpark, 12,000-15,000 people, all black. I mean, it was like incredible. We sold out in Greenville, South Carolina, on Mondays in a row. So you start your Monday with a good payoff. You know? Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I love Sailor Thomas. I grew up in Indiana, and he worked worked a lot for Bruiser there in Indianapolis. Right. And always liked again. I thought he was another underappreciated talent that doesn't get talked about enough. He was really good.
Easy to work with.
Yeah, and I got to ask you about Bruiser, because I grew up, like I said, I grew up in Indiana, a Dick the Bruiser fan. Obviously, I think you probably worked with Bruiser and Crusher, probably mostly in the AWA, am I right?
Yeah, AWA, yeah.
We had a few
matches with him in the Cow Palace, not the Cow Palace, but in the amphitheater in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Crusher, right. Bruiser.
What was Bruiser like to work with? Because everybody talks about how, you know, he wouldn't sell. And when he got older and everything else, did you find him difficult to work with?
No, he was easy. I mean, he was over by $1 million, you know. It's
yeah.
Like, you know, like real eerie experience working in Chicago, you know, like you got 12,000-15,000 people in the building, you know, like Henning and I would come out to the ring. Bruiser and Crusher come out to the ring, and the people start chanting, you know, "We want blood. We want blood." I said, "What?" Larry, I said, "What the? What's going on here?" People are nuts. Anyway.
Yeah. Welcome to Chicago. So, how did you come to be known as Luscious Lars?
Well, In North Carolina, you know, like I just sort of came up with a, you know, like Becker and Weaver, you know, like the old, you know, boy named Sue, you know, and like it sort of started around there. I don't know if I became Luscious first or they started calling me Sue. I guess they started calling me Sue after I became Luscious, you know. So. that's where it all started.
Well, yeah, and like you mentioned earlier, man, you were a very talented talker during your career, and did a lot of talking, obviously, for the Wrecking Crew, for the Andersons. Do you feel like maybe that's kind of what gave you the opportunity to break away a little more from Ole and Gene and do your thing?
Yeah, well, I had it with tag team wrestling. I wanted to, like, you know, develop myself as a single wrestler. You know, like wanted to go home to Minnesota, actually, a little tired of the North Carolina area. You know, in retrospect, I probably should have stayed.
Yeah, well, hindsight. You know, that's what they. But yeah, like I think it was. You know, like you said, Gene couldn't talk as much. So you know, you don't hear about Gene.
He couldn't talk a lick. I mean, he could. Yes. But, you know, he couldn't. You know, he just wasn't able to express himself. You know, because I just, you know, we were working with the Torres and. In Atlanta, you know, and you know, I put got heavy on the college bit, you know, like these, you know, mm-hmm. these ignorant Mexicans, you know, blah blah, you know, like they have no ability to learn anything, you know. So I mean, it developed plenty of heat, believe me, a little bit too much sometimes.
Yeah, and you always hear about Gene, how tough he was, right? How he had these incredibly strong hands, and I've heard stories of him, bringing guys like Barbarian and stuff down with just a nerve pinch, right? He knew those spots.
Right.
Did you see a lot of that? I mean, Gene, being able to manipulate guys, I mean, physically with, nerve pinches and different things like that, knew those pressure
Well,
points.
not as much as he probably did later in his career, but
Yeah.
he was like Gene when he first started, he started out, in the carnies,
Right.
taking all challenges on, you win $100 if you beat him type of thing,
Yeah.
like, I mean, he was a salty, he was a good wrestler in high school, he didn't go to college. Went 1 year to college, but he's salty as they came.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, right? He couldn't talk very well, but they're in Mid-Atlantic at one point. They tried to use him as a manager, and
Yeah.
I mean, it was just obviously,
Out of
right? There was still value in his name,
yeah.
but it's kind of ironic having a manager that really couldn't talk all that great.
Couldn't talk, yeah.
But I guess whatever. I mean, you still it was still on Anderson, right? They're still having Gene could sell a few tickets, but
I just went down to the other day. I mean, this last week, there are four wrestling fans that call themselves Smart Marks in Fort Lauderdale. Flew me in for a, and talk wrestling. It was pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah. So you just got back before. So what was it you were doing again? They wanted to just they flew you what they fill you in for?
And they flew me in to go out to have a steak dinner and talk wrestling, wrestling fans
Wow.
from way back when,
That's a very Japan-like thing to do, isn't it? Like
right?
the Yeah, well, I mean, it's a it's what it's all about, right? I mean,
Gave me a bit of
you
a and round trip ticket, took care of the hotels, took care of all of the expenses, so it was pretty interesting.
yeah, can't beat that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you look back on your career, right? I mean, and again, right? When people talk about the Andersons, I feel like Lars gets overlooked a lot. And again, maybe it's because you went out, you staked out, and did your own thing a lot, and so you didn't team as long as Ole and Gene and those guys did. But when you look back, I mean, do you ever see anything that you would have done differently?
Not necessarily, because I might have stayed in the Carolinas a little bit longer. That might have been a move that I could have done, but I was always involved in that business. I mean, I had a national t-shirt store company. I had the first national t-shirt store company living in Aspen, Colorado. I had stores in New York, the first one in New York and Milwaukee and like Chicago and Scottsdale, Arizona. And then today, I mean, after the thing that was over with in Hawaii, I developed, or with my son developed, bag, I mean, Shield and Seal. So we sell vacuum sealer bags, vacuum sealer machines to the hydroponic industry on a worldwide basis, so
Yeah.
it's always sort of involved. In Minnesota, I had a bunch of apartment houses and houses that I rented out and stuff. So, I mean, I'm just more business oriented at that time. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it sounds like you were a little maybe a little wiser with your money and your direction than some guys, right? There was obviously a lot of guys still out there hurting, itching for money. Right,
Yeah.
trying to recapture stuff, guys that made a lot of money back in the day and just weren't wise, and I mean, it is what it is. It's one of the trappings, I guess, of the business sometimes.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
yeah, you talked about right. You went to Fort Lauderdale, about those guys. Do you still, when the opportunity, the right opportunity pops up, do you still get out and do any conventions? Do you like doing those kind of things, or are you very particular about what you do?
Well, I've gone to a couple of the Cauliflower Alley. Well, I go to
Yeah.
the Cauliflower Alley. I haven't gone in the last couple 3 years, but I went one time to Atlanta and then one time to Charlotte, for the gathering.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Like talk. It's like you can't sit down and talk to the business, but if the guy's in the business, you can tell stories back and forth, and kind of a different group of people. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Do you kind of miss that side, the brotherhood side of it, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's like, it was like as painful as it was sometimes, it was totally enjoyable. I mean, I would not have redone my life again, redone it over, because I really enjoyed, I didn't enjoy so much the traveling in the later years, you're flying every day, and it just reminded me of this down to Fort Lauderdale, the trips, like a 4 hour, got held up 4 hours in Houston, and so they had to put the dinner was supposed to be Monday night, they put it to Tuesday, and then you're sitting around all day in the hotel. What do you do? So that part I don't care for, but the traveling I don't care for,
Yeah,
maybe.
that's what I think a lot of guys struggle with, right? That adjustment to that go lifestyle, and they don't know how to stop that, but
Exactly.
and it hits a lot of those guys. But like I said, Lars, I wish more people, not saying you're not appreciated, but I think when people talk about the Andersons, I don't think you get props enough compared to some of these other guys. And
Well,
again,
I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, it's probably
yeah, I
true.
think. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I mean, you were one of the original Wrecking Crew, right? You laid that foundation with Gene, and because you kind of did your own thing, and then Gene and Ole did theirs, and I don't know if it's a lot of guys now when they look for film, they see a lot of Gene and Ole, and then later Arn and stuff, and maybe that's why, but I think a lot of people don't forget that what Gene and Ole weren't the first. Gene and Ole weren't. It was
No, they were not. No,
it
it
was
was
Gene and Lars.
Lars and Gene.
Yeah, the original Wrecking Crew, right? Yeah, so,
And
but
we developed the style, we
yeah.
developed the style, and only fit into that particular style. So.
Yeah. I mean, Ole and Arn, I love them, right? And they were both great, very talented, but they were mimicking, to a degree, you and Gene's
Oh yeah,
style.
no, we did we. Gene and I
Yeah,
developed.
right, and it's a. There's something to be said for that. So, yeah, no, I'm glad we got to talk. I know we've been trying to nail this down. You're a guy, like I said, I've always wanted to talk to. I'm a huge fan of all the Andersons, but I have a deep appreciation for what you did, what you did with Gene, what you did on your own, and I think you're underappreciated. Again, like I said, you were a great talker and a great worker, and I don't think people talk about that enough, how good Luscious Lars was, and I think it needs to be said. So,
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
yeah, you're very welcome. And then, so do you have a way that people can follow you out there and see what you're doing, or do you kind of try to just keep to yourself and just let the promoters, if you're at a convention, do that?
The company, you look up the company, Shield and Seal, or saveandseal.com. That's what I'm doing today, is running a company on a worldwide basis.
Yeah, there you go.
We don't get into 14 years I've been doing it. We started out, 22,000 gross sales, in our first year. We did, last year, 7.5. We're doing
Man,
okay.
yeah, you're doing all right. I can't complain, right?
We have a factory in Gardena that produces home compostable jars and lids, for the dispensaries,
Yeah,
Grow in the garden, and 45 days they disintegrate. So anyway, it's a little bit
kind
different than taking bumps. Let's put
of,
it
yeah. It kind of makes it a little easier to when you miss wrestling, isn't it? When
that
you're doing well for yourself now.
way. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your time, Lars. It was fun talking to you. And maybe, like I said, I just wanted to kind of do an overview of your career, right? Not, kind of get a broad picture. And maybe down the road we can hook up again and go a little deeper on a few things. But I just
Anytime you
wanted to,
want.
sounds good. I
Anytime.
wanted, like I said, I wanted people to hear the overview of the story of Lars Anderson. And I gotta ask, have you ever been approached to write a book?
I have been approached, yeah, but it's never come up exactly, never come up totally. I just I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obvious. That's a big time commitment. It's a
Yeah,
yeah, it's a it's
but
a. Well, here's.
Like we talked about the Anderson style. I don't know if you know how much time we have here, but in
Quite a
any
bit.
event, when Valentine Valentine got, you know, like in the accident, you know, the plane crash, he ended up Florida Booker. And at that time, you know, like I had, you know, I had a difference of opinion with Ole. I was in the t-shirt business, but I came back to work once, you know, in Atlanta, and had a difference of opinion with Ole about a few things, you know. So I made a bunch, bought a bunch of these tapes, sent them to Detroit, you know, like, and did the interviews at WTBS and in Detroit, you know, and like, I was there one day, and my wife at the time was in New York, you know, so I was there one day. I said, the hell with this, I'm gone, you know. So Ole calls me up the next day. He says, Lars, you know, like, what happened in Detroit? I said, well, it didn't work out. I said, I didn't like the smell of the place, you know, the way the thing was, you know. So he said, well, you're totally unemployable in the rest of the business. So I said, okay, fine with me. You know, so then the next day, Valentine calls me up, you know, wants to bring me into Florida to work his style because he's the booker and in a wheelchair, you know.
Yeah.
So I said, Johnny, I'd be happy to come down if he's and so forth, but Ole told me I'm totally unemployable. He said, don't worry about Ole. So they sent me a ticket. I came down, so I'd come in the locker room. You know, here's Lars Sanders. Put the bag down. Okay, so I said, okay, Johnny, what do we do? He'd lay it out, you know. He said, you know, like, you grab a hold, you know, and pound on him, you know, don't let him go, you know. So, I mean, a whole different style, you know, like, you know, Rocky Johnson, Don Morocco, you know, Paige Morales, these guys, you know, wanted to do different things, you know, not doing anything different. Boom, pound on him, you know, and pound on him and pound on him and pound on him and hold them in a hold. You know, the fans are sitting there, and you know, like 15, 20 minutes, and they're pissed, the fans, you know, because, you know, like, nothing happening. And then the guy does a little move and boom, you know, up they come. So it's a whole different psychology, but it was a whole different learning experience, you know, like, learned a whole different style of work.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even touch on Florida. You had a hell of a run in Florida, right? Working Dusty, you worked Dusty a lot down there, and everything else. I mean, you had a when you talked about the difference of opinion with Ole, is that there was a time when you popped back up in Georgia, you were on TV for a few weeks, and Ole and Gene were there too, on TV, but they had you guys separate. You did your thing, they did, and then all of a sudden you just kind of disappeared. Is that was that that time period when you and then you had when you had the difference of opinion with Ole and
started my own company. I got a wrestling ring made and put in a ad in the paper, wrestlers wanted, Will Train, blah, blah. And, you know, so there it was in Smyrna, Georgia. I had Mo Richardson movie lights put in, and I drew a company. And that was that was at that particular time.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't even talk about that, man. You also had a great, you know, great time training guys. I mean, you did that and everything else. I mean, you know, ran your own company, like you said, and you know, booked in Hawaii. I mean, you did a little bit of everything. But I always wondered about that because, like I said, I watched, you know, a lot of Georgia wrestling. And you popped up on TV for a few weeks with some, you know, really, you know, decisive Anderson like wins, and Ole and Gene were there, but they kept you separate. And then all of a sudden, you were gone. Nothing ever. It was like they were priming for an Anderson versus Anderson feud almost. It looked like what maybe it was going to go to, and then Lars was gone.
I started my own company and went back to a little promotion in Tuscaloosa, Selma, Alabama, you know, that part. Went up and did actually northern Minnesota, North Dakota, Wyoming, part of Colorado, part of Ontario, part of Manitoba, you know, like Wisconsin, Michigan, upper Michigan, Wisconsin. And then I was one freezing winter day taking a ring, some guys up to Winnipeg, you know, like got up there in the ice and snow and, you know, 30 below zero. And I said, holy Christ, what am I doing? You know, the co-promoter there, Walter Shevchuk, said, Peter, my Via had passed away, and on the look, Leah is looking for somebody to get involved in the promotion there. And I didn't know that my Via's at all at that point, you know. So I said, "Where is the nearest phone?" You know, phone in those days. And then 2 days later, there I am in Hawaii.
In Hawaii, yeah. When you said you went to Detroit for a day, what year was that about?
It would have been, it would have been in the 1960.
Well, in any case, though, it
would have been probably 74, 70, okay, no, so, 76, 77. I don't know.
So you went up there, it was for the Sheik then, right?
I just went up for one. I was going to go work the territory, but, you know, I said one night was enough for me. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love the Sheik, but yeah, Detroit was a weird promotion. Yeah. It was kind of oddly, I mean, you know, I
it
mean,
was like, it was like total chaos as far as I'm
yeah,
concerned.
Yeah. It was different. I mean, there's guys some, tired, you know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were some good guys that came through there. Some guys that I really like, cause you know, obviously some of those same guys worked in Indianapolis, but yeah, there was some chaos and some weird stuff going on in Detroit. And, but it all, obviously the whole territory, you know, it's centered around the Sheik and, the Sheik and Bobo mostly, but, yeah, so that's interesting. So, well, all right, Lars. Well, man, I think we touched a little bit on a lot of stuff, and I appreciate your time. Like I said, we'll do this again in the future and dive a little deeper on some of these things, okay, and really we'll pick a topic. So, but I appreciate your time, Lars. And
thanks for having me.
Absolutely,
ladies and gentlemen, Wrestling Fans International Association is back. That's right, the premier fan club association of the 1970s and 1980s has been revived and is back in business. Join today. It's free at thewfia.org. That's thewfia.org. You can also join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/WFIA1969.
All right, welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. Thank you to Lars Anderson for coming on and doing that interview with me. And thank you for listening and supporting the show. Please go join the WFIA. Like I mentioned earlier, it is free. You receive a bi-monthly newsletter, lots of perks, lots of great things. So visit thewfia.org and join today. Next episode will be out next week. Watch my social media for the guest announcement. Anybody that knows me knows I'm a little superstitious. I don't announce a guest until I have recorded the interview, till it's done and in the bag, because I am fearful that if, you know, hey, I make an announcement, things will have to happen, reschedules, cancels, and then the interview didn't happen, and I don't like doing that. So watch my social media for the guest announcement coming in the near future. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for supporting on social media. And until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.